So today's subject is how to do our bhakti. How? You see? He said there are 9 kinds of ways, kinds of bhakti, or the devotion. 9 kinds. Navda means 9. There are 9 ways and means to have, to strengthen our bhakti or devotion with God. First of all, we have got your eyes. Through the eyes, that devotion is always developed and strengthened. So when you see the God in man, the God in you, light or sound, or the physical body which radiates the light and sound, when you see Him, eyes are the windows of the soul. We receive impressions from outside, about 80% of this, all impressions which we receive from outside, 80% are received through the eyes. So eyes are the most effective way to develop, to strengthen the devotion in us for Him, whom we love. So just you see, receive impressions, let those impressions embed it in your heart, and close your eyes. Just look, see, the God in man or the God light and sound, or the light and sound which radiates from the human pole. Just look at it, intently, mindlessly, penetrating, just forgetting everything else. Receive impressions, then close your eyes. Let those impressions be embedded in your heart. You see? Result will be, in due course of time, of course not always, all at once, that will be developing and that devotion will be strengthened from day to day. So much so that you will feel He is in me and I am in Him. You see? This is the true. So, true devotion, true bhakti is developed in this through the eyes. Well, God radiates through the eyes of this God-man, you see. Your eyes, through your eyes, you see into His eyes. When two eyes and two eyes meet together, and you see and He sees, you see, He just sheds or gives the lyrical glances of His higher divinity through you. You receive it. Receive the impression, close your eyes. Be absorbed in that. In due course, you'll feel, as you think, so you become. This is the best way of strengthening the devotion within you. So there are 9 ways. One is taken as a bridegroom and a bride. Christ has said, God is our bridegroom, everlasting bridegroom. Worldly bridegrooms are for 100 years at the most. The bridegroom of the soul is God Himself, and all our souls are His virgin girls, you see. So if you want that He should be just, what you say, infused in your very life, then receive the impression. This is the most effective way of developing love, or devotion, or strengthening in due course. The first kind is just like a bride and bridegroom. You see, in Christ, Catherine and others, they said, well, I've been just betrothed with Christ. So Catherine used to have, we have one ring here, you see, in sign of that she's betrothed to Christ. These are some of the examples, you see. So when two become one, outward examples are given just to bring home the truth of it at the back of it, you see. When two unite in the worldly way, they forget everything, they forget their body, they just enjoy that by absorption, soul into soul, they forget all world over. Similarly, when our soul, these impressions, and we, those are embedded in our heart, naturally in due course of time, patience is necessary, you see. Perseverance is necessary. Then you will feel from day to day that He is in me and I am in you. So twice Kabir had given an example. Just can I just lay down the bed within your eyes and look at him and absorb your whole, his whole, I mean, radiation what he gives within you and close your eyes with these eyebrows, you see, put these objects outside, curtains, and you be there and you, he be within you. You don't look to anybody and let him not look to anybody else. You see, these are the examples for sure. In this way, you will please the Lord, and Lord will be pleased with you. This is one way, it's like that. When you receive impression with this Jnana, naturally your heart will be, yes, overflowed with this devotion and love. What will give you, you will always be thinking of it. And when you meet others, you are speaking of the Lord, of the bridegroom, just like outward way, those who are newly married, they sit down, bride together, and talk about the husband, you see. Just like those are on the way back to God, they receive those impressions within them. They always, when two meet, they think of the God or God in man. And that devotion still further overflows, you see, becomes stronger and so much so that by radiation you are overflowed with that love divine, you see. This is one way how we should be devotion. There are other ways that we're speaking before. So today's subject is how to do devotion to the Lord. One way is like that. Receive in the old days there were some in the original time and in the time of Swami, if they are there, people used to look into the eyes of the Master. They said that they would look into it. For a few minutes, they will receive impression. This is the strongest way to receive the radiation of the Master. Once I was just talking, my Master used to, when I used to go, he would always sit by me, give talk. I used to talk to him and the people enjoyed. So I was just explaining that in the old times, Masters allowed the disciples to just make them sit before them and look into his eyes. Eyes are the windows of the soul. It is God within him that looks to you. And when you are receptive, you see all those impressions. This is, I think, the best way out. Then the time came out further, you see. Without you, he would not allow to go to his all right. He would say, oh, what is that? Look at me. So one of the disciples was sitting there, he cried, Master, why don't you allow us to do that? You see? So this is one of the nine forms of the devotion or bhakti, which is the most effective, I would say. Naturally, when you that embedded in your heart, out of the abundance of heart a man speaks. Naturally. You're always singing praises of the God, God in there. When two men of the disciples sit together, they're always talking of God. When more than one sits together, the devotion to the Godman or Guru Bhakti is strengthened. You follow me now? How these things are dwelt. These are not given in talks, I tell you. These are practical hints which are given in the morning, every day. So these are the way, those who follow that way. Naturally, when that is embedded in your heart, you will speak out of the abundance of your heart. When two will meet, he will be remembered, not to whom you talk. And two girls, newly married, they all talk of the bridegroom, you see. Similarly, when two disciples, devoted to the Master, the God in man of God, when they sit with, they always think of the Master or God. So naturally, how the love is radiated between two disciples. When they speak of their bridegroom, how nearer at heart you feel to each other. Similarly, when you speak of God, those who are on the way to that, they dwell more love. You see? That is such a relation which cannot be broken even after death. So God unites us, Godhead unites us in a relation which continues even after leaving the body. Our Master used to say, well, someone going across the river, some have reached before, the others are following, but all will meet together at the other side. Those who are initiated on the way back to God, they are all to go there. But who will go? Who will do bhakti in this way? These are things to just judge where we stand. The highest aim to have in human life, you see, is to know God. Because know God unless you know yourself. Unless you have been drawn from all, I said, the example is still given. You are cut off from outside. That's the most effective way, I would say, tell you. That's the bread of life, what Christ said. I am the bread of life. This is bread of life has come down from heaven. Those who partake of it shall have everlasting life. It's not the outer bread of life you should bread. It is bread of life. Which you get by looking through the windows of the soul, I would say, just into the window in which that Master, God in man, is radiating His love. This is most effective. This only expressed in words, you really get bread of life. That's the most effective way. This is one of it. Not even that is there, you enjoy those who are on the way, you see. You talk, oh, Master is like that, Master is like, God is like that. You dwell more. And all of you singing praises of Him, the God in Him. This is one way, see, in which our devotion is dwelt and is strengthened also. But time factor is necessary. Patience is necessary. Perseverance is necessary. Not in one day. In 2 days you'll find it. You'll forget who you are. It is I? No, no, no more I. It is He who dwells in my heart. Then the criterion remains, just put the same question to the Master and also to the one disciple who is just in tune with the Master. If you put in the same question, the same words will come out from the Master as you will ask from the disciple. Exactly the same words. The same words when Master speaks of such a disciple, well, he may be hundreds of miles away, he will feel radiation while there. That's it. He should become receptive. And that's the most effective. What I learnt, I tell you, from my Master, I'll simply look at it. And I question all through life, 2 or 3 questions I put him. No more. So what is He? He comes with us. And God is in Him and the God comes with you. That's all. Very simple, with no philosophy required. You learn by radiation more, thousands of times more than you have through practices of other persons. Your practice, you see, fruitful, becomes fruitful when you do that. For a while you see, you sit, you are withdrawn and gone, going. All foreign thoughts won't intervene, interfere. This is one way of bhakti. This is one, nine, there are 9 ways. 2, 3 comes that way. One like that, then what is within you, you speak of that, naturally out of the abundance of heart a man speaks. And whenever 2 of the same, on the same way together, they overflow with love. For God, not for love with each other. That is but natural. So God in man unites us in such a relation which never, what do you say, broken, even after leaving the body. We are all on the one way to back. On the same. So we have to just judge how far we have got. You see? There is no question of high or low, you see, rich or poor. Who have done it? I was just talking about the devotion to God and to the Master, you see. True worship lies in the fact that man must be true to the words of the Master, the God speaking through him. What he says is the Bible, is the Veda, is the Grantha, is the Quran. Take it as Bible truth, you see, and act on it. By simply paying obeisance outside, that won't help you. Unless you pay obeisance to the word and the commandments given by the Master, the God in him. Understand? Many people come to this system. What for? Only to have personal interest in that. Name and fame, I am the biggest worker in the system. Just having control of the bias, where people just look to my beck and call, like that. He wants to just supersede the Master too. He says the Master work is going on only through us, but for us. Such like attitude, these people go on so long as their interests are served, they'll go on. When their interests are marred somehow or other, directly or indirectly, they'll go against the Master openly. Such instances have been always in the times of the Master too. Even Judas was played against Christ. It was you crucified him. Even in all sessions, people come of different things. I am telling you, those who come with two hearts, really for devotion to God, they will have God. But if they come with some purpose in view, maybe name and fame, maybe some lucrative point of view, you see, maybe for some purpose here and there. Well, such like people cannot derive the full benefit of coming to the Mahat. Just you see, those very people who were become the, I mean, commander of the system, those very people, when their interests are not served, they go against the Mahat. People say, what is all that? He was the most devoted man. Well, he was not devoted to the Master, he was devoted to his personal interests. Leave your homes for the sake of God, all through the way. Don't think of anything else when you reach the place. Don't think of who has come or who has not come. Only you and between you and the Master, there should be no one, nobody else. We strike friendships within the way. And take it, tell them that, well, this is the way to love God. Well, look here, love God. Love does not mean sexual love. No, let me be very frank, you see. They begin to love physically. The result is they are stand between the Master and the man concerned. This is all. I have been very explaining these things openly. Nowhere you will find like that. But still with that, this is going on. People, I again miss you, must be true to your own self. The God is within you, the Master is within you. If you are true to him, you have to fear none. But for the sake of interest, selfish motives, people come for name or fame or some other lucrative point of view. When those purposes are served, you are very devout, I am the servant of servants and this and that. When that is little satisfied, then those very people proclaim openly, oh, such and such, we have seen the one. So this is the point discussed here, you see. When you come to the Master, heart is one. You can give heart to one, not to hundreds, you see. If you give to God, then love all God for the sake of God. All of them. Not for the... We love people and forget God, not for them. In that way, nobody will stand between you and the Master. You will have full benefit, you derive full benefit of coming to the Master. You follow me? This is the point discussed here. Simply read two lines and ponder over what is in there and put it in practice. You may be doing so many things in your brain, but you don't act even on one word of that. That's what to do. There's a story that five Pandavas, brothers, went to the Guru. The first day lesson was, we speak the truth. Go and remember these. They all left. The second day, the four brothers came up and the Yudhishthira did not come up. Third day, fourth day, 5 days, 6 days, 7 days passed. All were coming, but Yudhishthira did not turn up. Those four brothers told the Guru, look here, that is very simple. You said, speak the truth, we have remembered these very words, the very moment you uttered it. But very strange how bad I was saying. Such like Yudhishthira, he had not been able to remember these few words, speak the truth. Then he came up after some days and said, Master, I remember. And he never spoke lie or to lie. Such like attitude will make you perfect. You know so many things, you don't put it into practice, even one of them, then what will you do? If you want to derive the full benefit of attaining, being at the feet of your master, or by joining any school of thought, if you don't obey the commandments of your master, how can you proceed further? Student comes, master gives you a lesson, and the student does not remember that lesson what is given, then he does not care to put in, how far can he proceed further? Master gives some lesson, he memorizes it, then again comes, the master gives furthermore. He does not even remember the very first lesson. Then how can you proceed? Then you come here like a business, like I tell you, very strange, only paying obeisance, telling only humility outward way, that won't help you, mind that. If you love me, Christ said, keep my commandments. So, tum ye pyar karte ho, to mere commandments ho. Chalo, bas, let's go. So, you people come here with all due deference. Why you waste your time? You come here for some higher purpose. Make the use of this, best use of this. Only for wishy-washy way you come here, pay your visit like a customary thing, you see, that won't give you anything. So this is what is explained here. This book, you see, is gems, I would say. These points have been discussed in detail. This has gone through me with the grace of my God Guru, you see, and every detail has been discussed here with His grace. And those people who go into the depths of the thing, they know what is what. Start one thing from today. Well, speak the truth. Come after a month, I'll be back. If you start one thing, all other things will follow. See? Don't harm anybody in mind, thought, word and thought. You remember it then, your mind will be clear. Has the chastity, thought, word and deed. Then radiation is your right. So, if you love God, and God is in every body, the temple of God resides in every heart. If you love God, you will naturally love all others in whom He resides. Then, whom you are going to deceive, perhaps. We know mentally certain things. Our brain is full of libraries of these things, but not a single point is digested and put into life. That is why there is no change. You have been keeping diaries for how long? Most of you do not keep. Most of you. I think your phrase is invested. I have got about 80% people keeping diaries. Here I think 5% people keep diaries. You follow me? Keep diaries, be very, very hard task master, watch your life. Stick to it. I tell you, just digest one thing. Then put in daily time to your practices. 2.5 hours. How many there will put in daily? You sit, only then mind you have said, you got very perfect way. You got something to start daily at the very initiation. Somebody asked Yogi and others, how long will it take to have light with the sun? At least 5 years penance it will give you light. You get very first day. How fortunate you are. With all that you don't keep up it. You don't maintain it. Those are maintaining quite appreciable. I'm talking to all of you, those who don't care. I would rather have only one or two men coming here rather than 100 here. Don't wait. I love you, wife, with all your imperfections. And husband assured me, as Gandhi said, and husband loves his wife with all his drawbacks, infirmities. He said, I love Congress with all these shortcomings. I love you all with all your shortcomings. Why? Because you are sons of God. You see, God resides with you. I wish you come direct. You got the man body. Make the best use of the man body you have got. Only for that reason. Sometimes you pay more attention to one, they say, oh, that attention is only to bring you up. And that is also according to the commandment of my master. You see, what is the standard? If you don't come up to the standard, you are taught then. You say, what is it? These things have put before you so many times. I tell you very plainly, if you don't live up to what you are told, you cannot progress. Initiation helps you, of course, in your love for the Master, love for the light within you, you live up to it. If not, you don't care, you keep, take the medicine and put it in the shelf and don't use it, then please, you will have to come back again. Of course, not below man body. But what is use of coming back? You have got the man body now. Why can't you make the best use of the things you have gotten? Your soul touches this, God into pervading power. Into his special power, all sins will be washed. You are not to return. And much of the time of earthly life has passed already. Where we stand? Please do live up to what you are here. You come here. You come here for your own purposes and don't live up to what you are told, then you are deceiving all others too. I tell you, you don't deceive him, but all others, oh, this man is going to succeed, his life is such a way, his life is such a way. Yeah. People point their fingers to you. Such a low man, why? What satsang teaches? You defame the satsang. You become the source of deception to others. Is it all this taught by the satsang here? Come to senses, please. This is all what I just said. आपके यहाँ नहीं आने का क्या फायदा? आप भी उस बात को नहीं फायदा था जो तुमको देते जाते हो, तुम्हारे जीवन वैसे ही धंधा करते सत्संग ही ऐसा लोगों के धोखा बने संबंधी मिल कम आप तो भाई साहब आते हो तो लिव अप टू व्हाट यू आर टोल्ड. लव फॉर गॉड, लव फॉर एवरीबॉडी, जस्ट टेक वन बाय वन एंड पुट इट इन योर लाइफ प्रैक्टिस. Then you'll change. Anybody who sees you, he run up here and come with the only purpose of knowing God. They know the subject taught here, no agriculture, no engineering, no, I mean medicine or nothing of the sort. Only how to contact with God. That's a school for that purpose. It's a school of spirituality and nothing else. तो जिस काम के लिए आते हो वो काम यहां तुम्हारे आने का मतलब क्या? प्रभु को पाओ, यही है कि और कुछ? अगर यही है तो उससे पूरा फायदा उठाओ. तो देखिए व्हाट आई टेल यू, यू सी दीज आर वेरी गोल्डन जेम्स यू गॉट हियर. थिंक ऑफ देम, मेक द पार्ट एंड पार्सल ऑफ योर लाइफ. हाउ टू यूज दैट सब नाउ यू चेंज. गॉड इज आफ्टर सच पीपल हु आर रियली ट्रूली वांट हिम. Why you should run after God? God will run after you to find out where he can work to the human soul. Baba Jamal Singh went out to find Baba Saman Singh in the Marians from Bihar. There are thousands and thousands of other people residing in Punjab. Why did you go there? You were just watching who is the fishman in the water. The more you act up to it, you will derive the full benefit of coming to the master and also to have the man body.
Hello, and welcome to the Satsang for Master Kripal Singh. The recording you just heard was made up of two morning talks, How to Do Bhakti, from November 11, 1967, and Obedience to the Master, from January 12, 1968. Our reader this evening is Rudy Cascone. Hi, Rudy.
Oh, hello, David. Thank you. Today's reading will be from The Mystery of Death, Chapter 3, Life in Fullness, page 3, the last paragraph beginning with the process of withdrawal from the PDF file on the website RuhaniSatsangUSA.org. And Master begins by saying, with the process of withdrawal of the sensory currents from the body, the death-like process commences. You have not to do anything except simply sit in a calm, composed, and relaxed position with the attention fixed at the eye focus and engage in simran, or repetition of the charged names, which carry the life impulse of the masters through the ages and serve as passwords into the regions beyond. While so established in an easy posture or asana, in healthy surroundings, you forget yourself entirely, forgetting even the life-giving and life-sustaining piranas, the vital airs, which will of themselves gradually slow down and grow rhythmic, as do the entire respiratory and circulation systems of the body. At first, the sensory currents begin gradually to withdraw from the extremities of the body, from the tips of the hands and feet, and come upwards, gradually passing through the various bodily centers, chakras, each of which being the region of one of the five elements of which the body is composed. Until leaving the heart center, they reach the throat center, the seat of Shakti, the mother of the universe, the all-pervading energy, benumbing the entire bodily system below the eyes. From there, they proceed directly to the center behind the eyes, the Ajna Chakra. This is where the spirit currents get collected and gain entry into the foxhole within, Brahmendra, or the whole of Brahm, and have a peep into the Brahmand, or the cosmic universe. This is the 10th aperture in the body, the only inlet apart from the 9 outlets. This is the place where you have to knock and get admittance into the realms above, realms more vast, more glorious, self-luminous, and self-resounding with rapturous strains of celestial music, music unheard anywhere in the physical world, which has been left below, now no more than a great slum area fraught with miseries and tribulations, fading into the faint reflection of the world of ideas, as Plato puts it. At this stage, man becomes truly blessed by having access to the ethereal regions, the world of spirits. He is now at the threshold of the astral world in the company of the radiant form of the master, Gurudev. With his Guru Bhakti complete in every respect, when a disciple reaches the radiant form of the master, his job of self-effort is over. The Gurudev now takes charge of the spirit of the man and trains the spirit in Shabd Bhakti, or devotion to the sound current, which is his own real form, Shabd Sarup. From here, he takes the disciple along with him on the spiritual journey that lies through countless regions of varying spiritual sublimity, into the causal or instrumental plane, the seed world, the ever-pregnant mother with vast and countless regions lying unfolded in its womb, and then on to the supercosmic beyond, Parbrahm, where there are planes of silence, Sun, and great silence, Mahasun, and finally on to Satchkhand, where dwells the formless one of ineffable radiance, the ocean of consciousness called Satpurush, the primal manifestation of the Supreme Being. This holy process of withdrawal is simple, natural, and does not involve any onerous austerities. It does not involve a drastic control of the puranas. The masters have involved this rare technique and termed it science of the soul. It can be best learned under the able and competent guidance of some master saint, well versed in the theory and practice of the life current, word that exists in all created things, the creative and sustaining principle upholding all. All of the scriptures of the world bear testimony to this fundamental truth. From the Vedas we have, in the beginning was Prajapati, the Supreme Being, and with him was Vayak, the Holy Word, and Vak, the Word was verily the Supreme Brahm, Pra-Brahm. St. John says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by him, and without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. From the Quran we have Kalam, or Kalma, is the all-creative principle. God spake, kun fai kun, let there be, and from this fiat, the whole creation sprang into being. Nanak says, Shabd is the creator of the earth. Shabd is the creator of the firmament. Shabd is the source of light, and Shabd resides in the heart of all. It is on this basic principle of all existence, light and sound of God, that the Master gives a practical experience to all those who come to him in search of truth. The rare boon of holy initiation, an explanation of the theory, and a first-hand experience, shiksha and diksha, of the saving lifelines within, is not an end in itself, but just a beginning, a preliminary step for starting on the long journey of the soul to the true home of the Father. Those who have chosen to undertake this course of life are indeed fortunate. They experience this rare phenomenon of death in life and thus become jivan mukat, or liberated beings, while yet in the flesh, leading a life in fullness on whatever plane they like, but always remaining within the will of God. Such a lucky one, fully entrenched in Godhead, is in full control of his intellect, mind, and senses. He is the master of the house and not a handmaid of his mind and intellect. Like a good charioteer sitting in the chariot of the body, he directs his intellect aright, which in turn gives a direct lead to his mind, and his mind, when trained in the path of righteousness, refuses to be swayed by the senses, which gradually lose their potency and cease themselves to be attracted by the glamour of the sense objects. Thus is reversed the primal process of expansion, and one gets settled in himself, with the result that the still waters of the mind begin to reflect the light of God, fulfilling the ancient maxim. Unless the senses are subdued, the mind is stilled and the intellect too is in a state of equipoise, one cannot witness the glory of God. See also Psalms 46:10. This rich experience of life in fullness is variously called the second birth, the birth of the spirit as distinct from birth of the flesh. Led by the spirit, one now lives and walks in the spirit, abandoning the lusts of the flesh, and cuts right across the inexorable law of cause and effect, or karma, which keeps all others in perpetual bondage. And with the day-to-day progress on this path, new vistas of indescribable joy and beatitude open up and new horizons loom into view, encompassing the totality of all that is, thus giving greater and greater awareness, first personal, then supramental, next cosmic, and then supercosmic. And hereafter, the liberated soul, freed from all the shackles of mind and matter, enjoy perpetual bliss in the life of the spirit. And with an outlook on the life entirely changed, the vast creation now becoming the manifestation of the one life principle pulsating everywhere in him and around him and in all things, animate and inanimate. The world that he now witnesses is totally different from the world known to him before. It now looks to be the veritable abode of God, and one sees God truly dwelling in it, nay, in every constituent part of it. For all created things appear like so many bubbles in one vast ocean of life. Hereafter, the liberated souls live unto the Lord and dies unto the Lord. Like Saint, he gets crucified in Christ. And Christ lives in him, and with repetitive experience of the death process, he triumphantly swallows death in victory, the Father and the Son becoming one. Though the outward man of flesh and bone still persists and continues to exist, to spin out what remains of the karmic web of life, yet the inward man, the spirit in man, is renewed, growing stronger and more sublime with time. Forsake the flesh for the spirit, learn to die so that you may begin to live, says Thomas A. Kempis. In this context we have, while the people are mortally afraid of death, I welcome death as a harbinger of bliss. Die and be thou dead to the world. Such a death I experience many times a day, says Kabir. In all the four Bible Gospels, we come across so many references of like nature. He that findeth his life shall lose it, and he that loseth his life for my sake shall find it, from St. Matthew and St. Luke. He that loveth his life shall lose it, and he that hateth his life in this world shall keep it unto life eternal, St. John. Dadu, a celebrated saint, says, O Dadu, learn to die ere death overtakes thee. What will it profit thee when die thou must? Guru Nanak also says the same thing. O Nanak, practice such a yoga discipline as may teach thee to die in life. Prophet Muhammad too exhorts his Ummat, or the faithful, to practice the art of dying before death. Before thy death, do thou die. The mystic Muslim divines like Khaja Haifetz, Shams Tabriz, Maulana Rumi greatly emphasize the importance of such a unique inner experience. So long as you do not transcend the plane of the senses, you remain unaware of the inner life. Thou hast raiments beside the outer, the physical one. Why then dost thou fear to come out of the body? One may go on multiplying any number of apothegms on this subject. So we may close it with a passage from the writings of Earl R. Wasserman. Many are only imperfect individualizations of the one, and death permits the unindividualized and hence unbounded spiritual life. The post-mortal life, therefore, is a spiritual existence, for death, destroying the many-colored dome, allows the soul to outsoar the shadows of night, instead of working inwards to destroy organic existence. What then appears to be physical destruction proves to be spiritual immortality. What we call life is a decay. Therefore, earthly confinement, the mortal atmosphere, stains the radiance of eternity. On the other hand, the resurrected soul, reincorporated into the one, not the shadow of death or physical matter, is discovered in the true sense, spreading itself throughout nature, for the final reality everywhere is spirit. Were the atmosphere of immortality removed, man would perceive that the one remains, and that heaven's light forever shines, and that day and night are one, and even life and death, Lucifer and Vesper, and that the ultimate reality of both earthly life and post-mortal eternity is the spiritual one. And this realization of the spiritual identity of the mortal and post-mortal life finally ceases the pairing of opposites like life and death. So the one glows through time and change unquenchably the same. Then Wasserman goes on to say, learn to go unterrified into the gulf of death, for where mortal existence ends, the spiritual existence begins. With death, the resurrected soul outsoars the shadows of the night and is reincorporated into the changeless one. Prophet Muhammad also speaks of death and life in much the same strain. A death like this will not take thee to the grave, but it shall lead thee from darkness to light. Learn then to die every day by transcending the body. When a man learns to transcend the human in him, the master in his radiant form comes in to help the soul onwards to its true home, guiding the soul on the higher planes, both in one's lifetime and even after, when the mortal coil is finally cast off. In this connection, Nanak says, O Nanak, snap all the ephemeral ties of the world and find thou a real friend in some saint. The former shall leave thee while ye live, but the latter shall stand by thee even in the hereafter. Following the instructions of a Satguru, take hold of truth. Be thou true to him, and he shall stand true to thee unto the last. A Muslim dervish likewise says, O brave soul, take a firm hold of his hem. For he is truly above all the worlds and here and above. Similarly, we find in the Gospels, lo, I, the Christ power, shall be with thee till the end of the world. I shall not leave thee nor forsake thee. St. Matthew and St. Paul's letter to the Hebrews. In this way, the highest mission of human life is achieved and the fullness of life is experienced. This is the subject of contacting the self by the self, which disengages from the thorns and thistles of the worldly life under the proper guidance and help of a master soul who vouchsafes this inner experience to all alike, irrespective of sex, age, avocation, religious affinities, and affiliation and social orders based on blood, social class, caste, color, or creed. The spirit has got to be divested of the false halo of the self-created and self-projected personality that one unwittingly weaves around himself. Unless one becomes a pure spirit, divested of the love of all created things, one cannot enjoy the life of the Creator, which is a life of fullness and beatitude. That ends this particular chapter, and we'll continue with chapter 4 called Death in Bondage. In nature, death follows life, and life proceeds from death. Death as a cessation of life in one form is but a prelude to reliving in another form, and generally at a higher level of existence than before, and in better and more congenial environs. Evolution is the law of life, and it consists in the active flowering of the latent possibilities in the spirit matter. It comprises in its component not only evolution of the spirit matter, which grows more plastic and translucent in its onward march, but also evolution of the forms from minerals to human entities, and lastly, expansion of self-consciousness. The so-called dead matter is not really dead, though the spiritual energy in it for some time be in a congealed state. A worn-out garment whose utility has been outgrown is to be cast off and replaced by a new one, molded in the fashion one desires the most. Such is the law of Dame Nature, the handiwork of God. The kindly Father, it is said, hath ordained that his children may have what they ardently wish for. In providing the essentials of life on the earth plane, love, light, and life, and the necessary adjuncts thereto, like earth, water, sun, air, and space, together with all the means of sustenance, the Supreme Lord of the universe is munificent beyond measure and provides the same freely to all, though each one gets according to his need and measure of descent. The Lord's bounties are innumerable and exhaustible, and for ages man has fed upon them in diverse ways. Well, not satisfied with the limitless gifts, man ever craves for more. More of silver and gold, more of the amenities and conveniences of life, and more of everything else. He struggles and strives endlessly for them. Instead of being grateful to the Lord for all that he has, by his grace, provided for us, we curse ourselves, curse those around us who are in better and more affluent circumstances than we, curse the innocent stars above, and do not hesitate to cavil at and criticize in stinging terms our own fate or destiny, which we have by our own actions forged by ourselves. With all his possessions, one loses his head for just a pittance. Human life is a great privilege, a rare asset, and a blessing. It comes after passing through a long evolutionary process, extending over time unending. It is an opportunity for amassing the riches of spirituality that lie hidden within us, and of which we are hardly aware. But the majority of us are after ephemeral non-essentials, the sense pleasures of the earth life, and not real happiness. for these short-lived and fleeting self-pleasures we may or may not get, we, by all means, fair or foul, try to move heaven and earth, and more often than not pay dearly, even with our own life, and quit the stage of human life with many a deep regret for one thing or the other, and for the unworthy means employed and the sorrows suffered in the attempt. Nature is not extravagant in her design and purpose. As one thinks, so he becomes. Our feelings and emotions, thoughts and passions, desires and aspirations do not die with the death of the body. They constitute the inner vest and undergarment, the astral body, beneath the physical cloak, and the spirit cloak therein goes out to be covered by yet another mantle, drawn upon the karmic seeds lying in store in the causal and seed body, the precious treasure chest. It is this causal or instrumental body with its vast resources that helps its inmate, the spirit, in fashioning a new mold, a fresh tabernacle of flesh, which may serve as a fitting vehicle for the fulfillment of what lies uppermost in the unconscious self. The curtain finally rises, unfolding the entire panorama of life, down to the minutest detail ere one passes out of sight from the stage of life. And on the deathbed one may get a glimpse of reality, but then it is too late to comprehend it. This process works on and on, giving at the end of each person, each span on the earth, fresh momentum to the wheel of life and death. With its natural concomitance of joys and sorrows, wheel and woe, and sometimes up and sometimes low, moving in interminable gyres, as one is never satiated with all that one gets in one sojourn on earth, and each goes on adding new hopes and new desires, mixed with many a regret for what he wanted and did not receive. He is thus unwittingly engaged perpetually in sowing the dragon's teeth, and life after life he spends in fighting the self-started battles with his own self-braised armbands, which, like shadows, follow on his heels as untamed fairies or the avenging spirits. Nature, like the potter's wheel, provides the means of earth life in the form of many clayey pots, one after the other, for slaking the insatiable thirst and expectations of each individual. Weighed down by countless desires from top to toe, one makes a slave of himself. Without them, one would revel in his godhood. What is man, after all? God desires. And conversely, what is God? Man minus desires. And I'll end it right here. And I'd like to thank everyone for listening, and thank you, Master, for your poignant words. I read from the Mystery of Death, Chapter 3, Life and Fullness, page 53, and from the next chapter, which is Chapter 4, Death in Bondage, and I end it on the first three pages. Thank you very much. Thank you, Master.
And thank you, Rudy, for reading for us. There were 55 people at today's satsang. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And thank you, Master, for providing this for us.
Further, you see, all Master says, death is awaiting each one of us. There is no escape from death. Whether old or young, or learned or unlearned, that's the door of the death through which each one of us to pass.